From Capital Broadcasting Company, this is WRAL Out and About. I am your host, Kathy Hanrahan. This is a podcast about bringing people together. And my guest today has been through an event that did bring a lot of us together. My guest is Inez Rubistello. She is the co-founder of Tarboro Brewing Company. You probably know her restaurant on the square. And she was working she worked in the North Towers at the World Trade Center in 2001. She was not there on September 11th. She was actually in North Carolina. So she missed being in there. There's a chance that she could have been among the more than 70 employees of the restaurant she worked at who were killed that day. So she actually wrote a book, and it's really, it's real. It's about the last 20 years of her life. And she was so fascinating. I really wanted to have her on the podcast. So take a listen to my interview with Inez.
But tell me more about this book that you have coming out. So you wrote a book, which is amazing in itself. But tell me more about the whole book. And I mean, this, you worked in the World Trade Center.
Yeah. So I've been writing this book for 20 years, right up until this week, actually, when I sent in my final edits. The proof is coming today, I think. But I've always been a journaler my whole life, and journaled pretty much throughout my entire work life in New York, and didn't stop after 9/11. And just had it on my bucket list, mainly for my children and my husband, to have, you know, to have this. Well, and for myself, you know, I've been saying I wanted to do it, and I've been so scared to put it out there for a lot of reasons. I mean, it's very personal and it's very vulnerable, but it's also there's, you know, fear in not telling it right and not being, you know, not truly honoring not just the victims, but the survivors and also not telling it, you know, completely. And it became very clear to me about a year and a half ago when I was speaking to a friend who is an author in California that said, you know, you should put it out there for the 20-year anniversary. And I had that in my head, but it wasn't really until the pandemic happened that I felt like there was more to you know, there was more closure around it. There was something very eerie around what was happening when the pandemic started that reminded me a lot of where I'd been the days after 9/11. And so it almost kind of sealed it. And so last September 11th, I put it out there on my social media, my personal social media. I'm going to, here's a few pages. I'm going to do this and it's going to be released next year. And nothing like telling the world you're going to do something, because there's really no turning back after that. So really spent, you know, the past year tightening it up and organizing it. I mean, it was just stories and stories and stories and essays, and but it didn't have really rhythm or a flow to it. And so I was connected with a woman in LA who is I wanted to self-publish, and I knew I wanted to kind of invest in an editor, and she has been holding my hand since April. And really what she's been able to do to make it seamless is nothing short of amazing. I'll give her a lot of credit, because she had a big old jumble to work with. And so it's completed, and it literally goes up until, you know, this past summer. So we'll see. You know, we're putting it out there, and I, you know, my hope is that it will just resonate with people who have experienced some form of loss be able to feel healing in it.
So where were you on 9/11 when everything happened?
Yeah, I had come home to be the maid of honor in my sister's wedding. She got married on September 8th. That was Saturday. And then Sunday, I am from a blended family. That was on my dad's side. And then on Sunday, my mom and my other sister and I went to the mountains to kind of just hang out for a little bit before I flew back to New York, which was going to be on early Wednesday morning, the 12th. And so just being home for the wedding and just staying a little overtime for to be with the other side of my family allowed me not to be at work on the 11th.
So would you have been there? Would you have been at work that day? Would you have been in the building? Like, what, you know, explain to people kind of what your position was and what you were doing at that time.
Yeah. So Windows on the World is the most well-known for the restaurant, which was dinner only for the public, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Of course, on holidays like Christmas and Thanksgiving, it did a lunch seating also. But Windows was also a private club for people to have lunch there, so and breakfast. And we also had banquets. And my title on September 11th was beverage director, which was actually a day job. So while there were nights I worked the floor as a sommelier, the majority of the bulk of my time was in the office, daytime. And most likely I did go in early. I was normally there by 8:15 at the latest, Monday through Friday. So the likelihood of me being there had I been in New York is very high.
So how did you, emotionally, how was that for you, realizing that you kind of avoided potentially being in that building? And you know, what was that like? I mean, I'm sure you had some survivor guilt. I'm sure you had a lot of emotions you were dealing with. Can you just kind of walk me through, you know, those emotions and feelings when you saw what was going on?
Yeah, the first one was shock, disbelief, denial. I do say this in the book, when I had seen, the plane had hit One World Trade Center, I thought, oh my gosh, this is going to be such a mess to clean up in the office. You know, it was very naive. And then when I watched One World Trade Center implode, a bunch of denial. And for the days after, just like a lot of hoping that people were able to get out. And then, of course, that hope turned into real anger. And I would say anger was probably the consuming emotion for the year following, along with just hopelessness and confusion around why this had happened and what had happened. I wasn't as focused. Somebody asked me, about thinking, about what would have happened if I'd been there. I don't think about it that way at all. I just think about the people who were there. And I think about their families all the time. And, just the experience of someone you love leaving in the morning and just not coming back.
It's awful. How long had you been in New York?
I moved up in July of 98, right after graduation. So I'd been there since like leaving college. I was just a very young, fresh, Southerner, hits the Big Apple, and hit the ground running, never looked back.
The Out and About podcast will be right back. We are back with more from Ina Srivastava.
And from North Carolina, right?
Yes. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So you went to New York. After that, you did work at Bluefin. Is that where you went? Where'd you connect?
I did. I took a job about a month and a half after 9/11. Not the smartest thing I've ever done, but was kind of determined to get back into the groove and try to make things back to the way they had been, which was clearly not practical or real.
Well, I mentioned Bluefin because I've dined there like a few times when I've been in New York.
Yeah. So we just funny side note, we opened Bluefin on New Year's Eve, 2001. I mean, in Times Square, it was just insane. It was easily one of the hardest restaurant openings I've ever done in my life. Chaotic. Yeah, so my now husband, Stephen, who was also working at Windows on the World and was not there on 9/11, he and I both took jobs, and the Bluefin job was super high stress. I was not emotionally equipped to go right back into that kind of job, and I was really miserable. And meanwhile, my parents back home in Eastern North Carolina were saying, come home, take a break, and Stephen and I had already committed to working the harvest in Burgundy in the fall of 2002. And so Stephen said, your parents are telling us to come back. I mean, what an opportunity, an amazing gift that we can just take some time off before we move to France. And so he and I packed up our entire apartment, put it in a U-Haul, and came back to Tarboro in May of 2002. And the plan was that we were going to just spend the summer kind of relaxing at home and then go to France in August, work the harvest until October, and then move back to New York and kind of regroup. But while we were at home, we got a phone call from our very dear friend, Francis Liverman, who said, I'm trying to sell my restaurant. And I heard that you and your husband were restaurant people. And I said, oh, Francis, we don't have two dimes to rub together, but thanks for thinking of us. But my father heard the conversation and say, kind of took it from there and found another gentleman, and they bought the restaurant and closed on it literally the day Stephen and I came back from France. So Stephen gave my dad an 18-month commitment, which is now going to be 19 years in October.
Wow, what a story. Okay, so from there, what happened? You opened.
Oh, yeah. So it's really wild. We came back and opened the restaurant, which was basically like a little luncheonette. Everything was like cooked on a panini press in the dining room. There was a small little room attached that was the smoking section. And it was just, the complete opposite of Manhattan. And so we, we were committed to wine at the time, that was our career and that was what we loved. So we took that little smoking section and we put a great big piece of plywood over the window where the natural light was. We inserted a little air conditioning unit and built wine racks and made a wine store. It was actually the first of its kind in North Carolina. We took advantage of the on-premise, off-premise license that few states have. New York doesn't have this, but in North Carolina, if you have a glass of wine or a bottle of wine at a restaurant, you are allowed by law to take it home. So you can buy a bottle of wine to take home from a restaurant. And so we created this little space to become a wine store. And so people would say, oh, I love this wine by the glass. And like, great, you want to take home a bottle tonight? And or a case or whatever. And so that little wine shop slash working cellar slash office, it's kind of where we have done all of the nuts and bolts. And then we quickly got rid of breakfast, which my husband said he never signed up for. We renovated the kitchen, and it was such a work in progress. You know, we made a little money, we invested a little money. At the onset, I think we just did lunch and breakfast. And then when we got rid of breakfast, we opened up like Thursday and Friday nights. It was just wine and beer. And then eventually years later, we got our liquor license. But yeah, it was a whole process. And in the middle of that, we got married. And I moved up to New Jersey to take a job as the beverage director for Borgata Casino Hotel and Spa. And that was basically out of necessity. You know, On the Square was brand new, could barely pay one of us, much less two of us. And so we got married, and the day after we got married, Stephen drove me up to New Jersey and dropped me off. It was a very sad week, and he came back and lived in Tarboro with all my family and started making a go of On the Square, and really made it what it is. And then, because we're so not in control, I found out that I was pregnant and had to come back, which was great. And by that time, On the Square was really like proving itself. This was 2004. And it gave Stephen the opportunity to really focus in the kitchen, and I focus on the front of the house. And we had our amazing daughter, Cynthia, who is a September 12th baby. And it was just like quite a bit of healing on that day. And then about 3 years later, had our son, little Stephen, and meanwhile, just continuing the grind, on the Square. And, in 2008, we bought a big 10,000 square foot building a couple blocks down, that where the idea was to move On the Square because, it had outgrown its original location. But a lot of people remember what happened in 2008 when the economy tanked and no one wanted to invest in a restaurant, period, much less one in Eastern North Carolina. And so we got an idea to open up a brewery, and it took us a long time. But in 2016, we opened up Tarbor Brewing Company, which is where I spend the majority of my time. And then a year later, opened up TBC West on the Rocky Mount Mills location in Rocky Mount. So that has been the what's been consuming me for the past 5 years is mostly all things brewery.
Why a brewery? Why did you guys want to go in that direction?
Yeah, you know, a couple reasons. If you've been to Tarboro, we are, we're a poor area. And it was quite clear that while, you know, On the Square for lunch, most everything's under $10, we still weren't accessible to a big part of our community. And, what we saw to be true is that, yeah, breweries are great for enjoying a pint of beer, or, maybe a glass of wine too, but they're also can really act as community spaces. And this one has, it's exactly what we intended it to be. And we've hosted so many great, community gatherings in that space that I feel like it's a vital part of our town, of how we like kind of make awareness happen.
Well, it's been a journey. I feel like you have had like, it's amazing, you know, to think about your career and your family and your life and just kind of crossing over and doing all these different things. And now from New York to a brewery. I mean, you're kind of just y'all did it all. But I know. So over the time, over the past 20 years, you've just been slowly putting away, writing things. Has it been just therapeutic for you? Just I'm writing about my experiences and things that have happened. And is that kind of what, you know, prompted the whole book idea?
Yeah, it's therapeutic. And also I feel like I just did this in with talking to you, like when I try to go through the whole story and tell it just in like in a conversation, I rush through it because I'm like, it's too much, right? It's just too much to tell. And I don't want to rush through it, but I also like feel like there needs to be breaks in it. And so, yeah, the book is kind of making sure that I tell that story because I do believe, especially with the brewery, there are a lot of things people just don't know. You know, there is a chapter about the restaurant burnout, right? Like, you know, about Stephen and I working together and being in an environment that is like never stopping in terms of complaining, needing, you know, and that's hard to say sometimes in a, you know, in a conversation, where you may not have, where I may not have the opportunity to really go deep. And I just wanted to make sure, you know, that at the end of this time, you know, my children in particular have a very, clear understanding of like what the past 20 years have been like, you know, the rebuild for sure, but also like some of the decisions that we made and how we got to them.
Yeah. And it's a way of preserving it, you know, and having it there for them, but also a way of kind of helping you not forget everything that, you know, because it's easy for us to forget some things or we block things out. But it's an amazing story. So when is the book going to be available for purchase?
So, because I am a diehard Tarboro person, we have the one and only book release on September 11th at my stepmother's store in downtown Tarboro. And then after that, it will be available on all the other, you know, main sites. I'm hoping to give independent bookstores the plug, first and, not the big places. Cause I want these people's dollars to be spent locally, at small businesses. So yeah, Rusty's in downtown Tarboro from 11 to 1, we'll have a book signing. And then after that, on the normal spots.
Was there anything else you want people to know about you, about the book, about your life, about everything?
You know, I just think the biggest thing with the book is that people will be able to feel or to understand that, you know, we can literally reach the depths of hell in life where you believe there's just no coming back, but there is, there's always a way back, right? That just time, you know, I'll never be the same person I was before September 11th. And while there's a mourning in that, you know, I remember that person and I'm sad that she won't, you know, she's not around any longer. There's also a growth and, kind of a transitioning. And so I'm hoping that people can see that happens. You know, I'm fortunate. Both of my uncles were Presbyterian ministers, and my uncle Jim, who's now dead, he told me one time, you know, you can't really experience the grace of God unless you've experienced true pain. And you know, just that with true pain comes incredible growth.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for taking time to talk with me.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it, Kathy. And maybe one day we can meet at Bluefin and have some sushi.
I want to thank Ines for joining me on the podcast. We will have information about her book in the show notes in the podcast, so you can find out more information about how to get a hold of that book. It has been a very interesting talk with her, and I could have talked for hours. So this has been the Out and About Podcast, a production of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. If you like what you heard, you know, share with your friends. Let us know who you'd like to hear on the podcast. Contact us on social media, WRL Out and About on all platforms. Have a fantastic rest of your day, guys.